very much for coming, everyone. It's great. Yeah, tonight is the second talk out of four artist talks, which I've organised as part of a project I've been doing for about a year, or working on for a year or more, called Road to the Future. And it all started when I heard about... Well, it started a bit before, but when I heard about Susteren's working on a project to turn the old railway line from Maidenhead to Bridport, West Bay, into a cycle path. And I loved the idea, of a kind of public space that would be created if that was done, a sort of line of public space through the countryside. And I'd moved here a couple of years before, and was very much moved from the city. Was very much sort of wondering how to work here as an artist, and finding out what was going on, and just kind of figuring out the layers of what the countryside, more of the layers of what the countryside is as a place than I suppose I'd thought of it beforehand as a visitor. And so going underneath the picturesque landscape and just learning about the uses of it and the problems, etc. Anyway, started working a bit with Peter, who's going to talk in a minute, sort of how could we make a cycle path happen? And I thought, well, I can work as an artist and do what I know how to do, sort of in parallel or in association with that. And so I've focused on Powerstock Common, which is right in the middle of this stretch of old railway line, as a site, and invited other artists from elsewhere to come and work on their own projects at the same time. Judith Dean is one of them. I think I'll leave it there. I've asked Peter to say a little bit about the cycle path project, just a background, a bit of background context. Please talk during, well, if that's all right.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Talk during
the
talk
that.
And afterwards.
Yeah.
And it's very informal. So any questions, just ask us. And I'd like to thank Joe Morland, who's project manager, who's been helping me as a project manager. And who's just been great and done loads. Thank you very much. Peter, do you want to say a bit?
Thank you, Anna.
I'm sure a lot of you have heard of this before. The Maidenhead-Bridport Railway Path. For those of you who don't, it's obviously about transforming the railway into a cycle, multi-use path, I think it's a current jargon. And it's a great project, not only will it be a great path, but unlike most of the disused railways, no one's built on this. All the bridges are there, apart from one. And you all know this is one of the hilliest parts of Dorset. And like magic, for 10 miles, you can go from the hilliest part of Dorset and you barely see any hills. So it will make a really great path if we can get it done. The difficult bit is that it's now owned by about 20 landowners, all of whom have to be negotiated separately. We've made quite a bit of progress over the last couple of years. We've got planning permission on one stretch. We're applying for another stretch shortly between Bridport and Lovers. And that will probably be the first bit of path we start building next year, next spring. Like a lot of these paths, it's going to be a leisure path. People will come here, tourists will come here to use it, which is great for the economy. But another important point about the path is that it will be very useful as a utility path. People can use it to go to work, to go to school, to go to shops. Example is Tullapa Corn up at the other end. That was cut off during the snow last year. There's only one road out, it wasn't gritted, and people found the road completely stranded. If the path had been in place, it's a level 2 mile walk into Maidenhead, and the kids could have got to school and it would have been safe. So that's what we're doing. If anybody wants to know any more, go on the mailing list. I've got my little notebook with me, so just let me know after the end and I'll get you an email. If you've got any more questions, I can run through this proposed route with you and just show you where the bottlenecks are and where we're making progress. And apart from that, over to you.
Thank you. All right, hi everyone. Thanks again for coming. Now let's get this happening. So I'm going to run through five different projects that I've been doing since 2005-06, and they're quite diverse, so you'll get used to that, I'm sure. I'm going to start then with this piece, which was commissioned. I was fortunate enough to win something called the Gerwood Sculpture Prize in 2005, which it's like an open submission national sculpture competition in which you submit a proposal with a maquette and actually without a maquette, just the proposal, and then they create a short list, and from that a piece is selected to be made and installed in the grounds of Ragley Hall, which is where they keep the sculpture collection. It's a stately home which is about 8 miles outside of Stratford-upon. So my proposal was to cast a small section of ploughing in bronze and then install it in the ornamental gardens of the stately home, so that it was overlooking the working fields beyond the garden perimeter. So the grounds beyond that fence are, you know, sometimes they're, now what's the technical term, I can't remember, but farrowed or minimally cultivated, and other times they're for pasture and things like that. So this was about, in a sense, taking a bit of the earth and casting it in something from the earth and then putting it back into the earth. I'm quite interested in tautologies in different ways in my work. But I also liked, it was embedded, we dug a deep hole so it could be embedded into the earth and the turf laid around it. So it was as if it was part of its environ, and that over time it would become absorbed. So insects land on it, it rains, some puddles form. There's even a, this one, yeah, it self-seeded in the middle of it with a bit of grass, and I quite like that, and the leaves fell on it. Bronze is this incredible material, really. It was unbelievably convincing in situ. We had a kind of opening and people were leaning down to touch it, not believing that it was bronze because it looked so much like the earth. And I was quite interested in that kind of, that sort of trompe l'oeil effect. Okay. That's the first two I'll go through quite quickly, really. This then is, it's a bit of an obscure photo to start with, but this is a project that I did in Grasmere at the Wordsworth Trust. They used to have an artist in residence programme. So I was there for 6 months and developed an exhibition really in relation to being there. Whilst I was there, I decided not to really travel very far, and I walked everywhere. So I could get what I needed pretty much in Grasmere, or I would walk, it's about 4 miles to Ambleside to get things. And I didn't go and visit anywhere else in the Lake District. I just sort of inhabited that place, and really I was very interested in being incredibly local and what that would be. I suppose I'd I live in London, and I've often had fantasies of living in the countryside, and what would the reality of that be like, and whether I would want that or not. So it was sort of, I was testing that out partly. This was quite soon after the exhibition opened, and one of the things that they had a continual problem, as one does, with leaves going into the gallery space. And I asked them not, and obviously having to hoover them up, and I asked them not to do that. So for the duration of the show, which was about, let's think, it was a long show, it was at least 4 months, they didn't do any hoovering. So gradually the leaves start, built up in the gallery space. So that there was this, the sense of the outside coming in. And I suppose that was also part of the strategy of the whole piece. It's how I negotiate this thing of, being in the Lake District, in this beautiful part of the countryside, wanting to be outside most of the time. And then I'm an artist making an exhibition, and there's this gallery space, and I have to somehow negotiate that divide, and then encouraging people to come inside to see that when I actually want to be there to be outside. But I was interested in that tension, I suppose. So this, I should say also, the exhibition ended up being comprised of about 30 different, in fact it was 30 different elements, some of which I consider sort of works, as it were. Other things were elements that were important to the show but wouldn't be shown outside of this context. I mean, I guess this was one of the works. This was, and they all had titles. So this was called Partially Uplifted Molehill, which, for anyone who knows, it sort of references a piece by, a rather iconic piece by an artist called Robert Smithson from the 1970s called Partially Buried Woodshed. And yeah, it's a play on that, really. Anyway, I happened to be, the other thing I should say is there was a disused allotment very close to the Wordsworth Trust. And again, having fantasies of growing things, I decided to cultivate this allotment, not as a piece of work, but as something, as a kind of thinking space. It was something else to do whilst developing the work for the show. So quite a few things came out of the allotment into the gallery space, including this. This is a molehill that was made, I happened to sort of catch it in, I mean, I don't know if anyone's seen that, but a molehill being made. So there's video footage of this thing just gradually erupting on the screen. In fact, there's just two shots on a loop, one erupting and one that's still. This was, memory. I do have, luckily I've got a list. This was something about grown. Oh, checkered plank, it's called, and then colon grown, and then in brackets, without the sound of a creaking tree. And that was just a plank that I found in the lake that I coloured in with coloured pencil. Make it this like this sort of decorative object, really, but that was quite distressed and used, and as if I'd planted it in a pile of compost in the gallery. So there's a sense of farce and an absurdity, but also the lack of sound in the gallery space in relation to the countryside was quite important. I haven't talked about this before, have I? That's called Protected Plinth, and it's a found log that obviously foresters cut down the trees that had fallen or that were diseased and things. And I had it sawn so that it had completely flat top and bottom, so it was as if it could be a plinth that a sculpture could go on. And then I painted the bark with Ronseal to sort of protect it, but left the top and where that knot is, or the tree had been, the branch had been cut off, left those bare. So you don't really see it in this image, I don't think, but the Ronseal had this effect of making it almost, and the brand new axes had this effect of making it quite cartoon-like, although it was actually a real thing.
Was each piece related to poetry or not?
No. Not at all, really. I mean,
apart from the Mulholland one.
Every piece is titled, and I was interested in language in relation to the works, but none of them relate specifically to poetry.
No.
Having said that, I was obviously very conscious of his presence, or his past presence, and they've got an incredible archive there of the Romantic poets and of art from that period. For me it resonated with that kind of connection with that landscape, you know, and being there and the way, and I suppose living locally in that sense. And I mean, I did go down to London within that time. It wasn't like I sort of cut myself off completely, but for me, related to a kind of way of life that has, you know, was more to do with the 19th century than now. Mm. So, or as much to do with that. This is embarrassing. They've got much longer time. I've got titles that. This is plot. I think this might be plot and then lost in brackets. You can't see it terribly well. But it's basically, I reconstructed one of the beds from the allotment with new found bits of wood in the gallery space. And I found a sheep's skull and there was a moth. I mean, sheep skulls are such a cliche in the countryside, and in a way, well, in that part of the countryside, and it was sort of used in that spirit, I suppose. And then I cut. You can see that it's a sort of yellow ochreish floor. The gallery was actually carpeted, which is quite unusual for a gallery, and really something that I didn't, like. And fortunately, they let me then cut a section of the carpet out. This structure is embedded, although it's only, how thick those kind of institutional carpets are, it's only a matter of millimetres. It sort of makes made all the difference in terms of that sitting in the space, or sitting down, or that sense of going under. And then there's a light sprinkling of compost and sequins on there. This is called Outside Edge, and is a series of postcards collected of the Lake District, of Grasmere in particular, and a couple of old window frames that that were lying around in the allotment, the kind of things used to build cloches with broken windows. That's a kind of a composite panoramic photograph of the space. It was the old sweet shop. This was the front room, so it was quite a pokey space. And I basically put these images of Grasmere across and hung the window in front of where a window actually is, but that had been boarded up for the sake of having a gallery. So it's like you're inside the gallery space and able to look via the postcards at views of where you were, but what you can see. Yeah. This was International Fruit Boulder, which was, I mean, it's a boulder. Calling it a boulder was a bit of an exaggeration. It was about a foot wide, and with stickers from the supermarket or from food that I bought whilst I was there that was from all over the world. It's a water feature. Gosh, there's more of these than I thought. That's a hose from the allotment, and just some ink poured down the wall. Because there needed to be a water feature, really. That's not really a piece of work, but within the logic of the show. I did a series of things called machine washes, and which were, I just bought, selections of cotton reels, obviously, and put them in the machine, and had them, put them on a wash cycle. And that's what came out. So it was like, it was a bit like washing something before it existed, I guess. That's a horrible slide. I won't talk about that. That was the back room. I suppose the interesting thing to say is in the back room, I took the carpet up completely and then laid down. So you get that, you know, when you take up that incident and you get all the glue on the floor and it's a bit crappy. And then laid carpet tiles upside down in this checkered pattern. So it was a bit like a sort of, as you went through the space from carpet to partially removed to this totally removed and this checkerboard thing, it was a gradual sort of disruption of the floor space in which these things then sat. That's called Little Sod, and it's a cast of a sod of earth from the allotment. Oh, that's the next project. So, now I was going to say something else. Oh yes, images I haven't got, but I have this book that I made at the time of the project. There's a copy at the back if you're interested. And this has a couple of other images of other areas where I took out wall sections that were covering up bookcases and things like that. So places where it had been made more of a gallery, I sort of unpicked. It also has a list of prices in it, which I'm mentioning really because of another project that I'm coming to. The original catalogues that were made for exhibitions were basically initially to have prices of the work, and now if you're having it, I mean, really, you wouldn't. It's not something you would do even in a sort of commercial gallery in London, or wherever. Exhibiting contemporary art, you just wouldn't really put the prices in. So it was something that I wanted to do, to have the economy of it as, in different ways, it's part of the work. But then I priced things. I think the cheapest thing, there was something for 10 pence, and then it went through, there's quite a few things under £100, and then it went up to, the one thing is priceless. So obviously the idea of something, it's both without price and beyond what I was prepared to value. Okay. Having done that project, one of the things that came out of it was, and I hadn't set out with that intention, was that people were saying to me, well, it's a bit like a representation of the Lake District. This, it's like you've recreated the Lake District in some way in the gallery space. And it wasn't, I hadn't quite articulated that when I started, I guess. And then I thought, well, okay, if I take that idea, what would I do if I took that idea? And I decided to try and build Rome in a day. So suddenly that brought with it lots of different things to deal with, I suppose. Not only was I not in Rome, So I didn't have that sort of access, that immediate access to the place. But also, obviously, the notion of trying to build a city, not knowing, you know, I mean, what's a city really? It's kind of indefinable in many ways and continually changing and bloody. I mean, it's ridiculous. So those ideas of kind of ambition and time and absurdity became quite important. For this was the first version that I made. I've made a number of, you know, I hesitate to say it, but I've built Rome in a day a few times. And this was the first one. And in fact, I did go to Rome. I mean, there's that... I mean, there's a phrase that's used about Rome. You know, Rome has been built of Rome at various times throughout its history. So I thought, okay, the first one I do, I go to Rome, I get bits of Rome that I think will be useful in order to then make it in a day. So I got things like a magnifying glass that would make stuff look bigger, and I collected like the baseball bat hat at the front is a Roma. So things that clearly signify where I've been and what I've been doing, and also that indicate sort of my position as a tourist, as someone outside of this situation. And then, so I said, there are some detailed shots coming up. But then I, having figured out how I wanted to use these different elements, I then kind of configured them as a sort of procession. So this is a postcard from the Basilica of, I think it's San Maria Maggiore. My Italian's terrible still. And a set of plastic bags that I collected that I just layered up and sat that within it. I bought some gold pigment and put it inside this other plastic bag with some, you can't really see, but there's some tangled